Cap Radio special coverage is up next. We'll speak with a Sacramento resident hit in the face by a tear gas canister and several rubber bullets during demonstrations this past weekend. They join us live just before surgery. We'll also hear from a Black trans activist who has been outspoken on the issue of police violence, and a Sacramento jazz trio tells us their experience with systemic racism. I'm Randall White. Join us for these discussions just after the news. This is Cap Radio special coverage. I'm Randall White, and today we're hearing more voices related to the ongoing protests in the wake of the killing of George Floyd in Minnesota last week. And an update on that front today, Minnesota's attorney added a second-degree murder charge to the counts against fired Minneapolis police officer Derek Chauvin. He's the officer seen in a bystander's video with his knee pressing against Floyd's neck. The state has also charged the three other officers fired in that incident with aiding and abetting murder. Since Floyd's death, a wide range of demonstrations, including peaceful protests and rioting, have broke out in cities throughout the nation. That includes Sacramento. The violence peaked in Sacramento on Saturday and Sunday nights before the National Guard was called in and a curfew was put in place on Monday. That remains in place as we speak. Tifan Sofa is from Sacramento and says they were at the downtown protest around 11:30 on Saturday night, passing out snacks and water to friends. They're now in the hospital awaiting surgery because of what happened next. And T joins us from a hospital room to help us understand the turn of events. Welcome to Cap Radio.
Hi. Hi, Randall. Thanks for having me.
T, I really want you to explain, you did explain that you had only been at the demonstration for about 5 minutes. You told us that before we went on the air. When everything changed, can you tell us what happened at that moment?
Well, direct action can look so many ways and how to support each other. So for me, I knew I needed to stay away from the police violence that was happening in the streets because it would trigger me, and that wouldn't be good for anyone. Mm-hmm. And so I was dropping off food throughout the day. Thank you. that was Francis. He's really sweet. He's my nurse.
Okay, right. We should explain that you are in a hospital right now.
Yes.
And so if people hear noises and that sort of thing, that's what's happening. Francis just brought you some tissues.
Yes. At this point, it was, I can't really remember the time. It was either 10:30, between 10:30 and 11:30. And things were happening so fast. And I was just hearing the communications, but I went out to that area because I know folks are out there.
And this is down by the Capitol?
No, this was J and 21st.
J and 21st.
The Sacramento Native American Health Center. Mm-hmm. And everyone was scattered everywhere. I couldn't figure out where anyone was. There were flashbangs, in the sky. I was a block away, so I had to go down the alley and try to look for people. And it was really hard to place people. It was chaotic. It was like a war zone. It was like protests that I've seen internationally, and they were just firing. It was like a firing squad. It was like they're shooting rubber bullets at crowds in the same intersection. Shooting right before I got shot, there was a 19-year-old black boy who was shot in the head just like I was, with a tear gas canister. So when I went out there, I saw what was going on and I was just shocked. I saw them shooting tear gas canisters what they do in Palestine and other countries that are oppressing people. And I just needed to go look at it, I just needed to see if this was the same situation, And once I went over there, I wasn't thinking honestly, but knowing what I know about the police and state violence, I went over there shouldn't have done this, but I picked up this tear gas can and just like to look at it. And before I knew it, I was knocked to the ground. And then I realized I was hit by something. And then someone pulled me, yanked me as I was crawling because I was so scared. I didn't know what was going on. And I knew that I was going to get hit again because they were constantly shooting. And luckily, I don't think I got into a concussion because someone yanked me so hard off the ground that I got right up and started walking. And luckily I found my friends there at that moment. And then my head started gushing with blood. And people were, there was so much love in the streets. Like someone took off their shirt, wrapped it around my head, you know, to stop the bleeding. And then we couldn't go back because the police were moving forward and they kept shooting and people were running. I'm like, don't run forward, run to the side because they're going to keep shooting forward. And mind you, I was in that same intersection on JN 21st when this happened. We were in the same intersection.
Yeah. T, I want to make sure we don't have a whole lot of time left, so I want to make sure I get to all of this. So the canister hit first, and then several rubber bullets, I think a total of like 5 or 6, both on your face and your body. When is your surgery?
So my surgery should be hopefully it's today. I'm hoping it's today. It's been 3 days I've been waiting. But I got hit by one tear gas canister that gave me a gash on my head that broke my eyebrow bone. I have 3 fractures in my skull. I have a brain bleed that isn't serious enough for a neurosurgeon, so I'm very fortunate. I have like some dead brain tissue that's very like not enough to like go in on. And so I have two facial procedures, one for my cheekbone. My jaw can't open all the way. And it's broken, so they have to pop it out, maybe put on a titanium plate. And also with my eyebrow, they have to go in, be careful with my eye.
T, I just titanium. Briefly, I want to ask you, you have a video on your GoFundMe page. And in the video, you mention that it was hard for you to tell people in your community what happened to you. And I'm wondering if you can explain that. What community are you speaking about and why was it hard to tell them?
It's hard. I mean, like, there's so much love for each other and we want to protect each other. And it's enraging. Like, if I found out that my friend was directly attacked in this manner, I would want to burn the city down. You know, this is the city. The police and the city is escalating this by doing all of this. Like, they don't want riots. They don't want looters. Then stop escalating the situation. Give people room for conversation. Let people grieve. You know, there's so much more to address the problem. And Daryl is just not it.
You're talking about Daryl Steinberg, the mayor of Sacramento.
Daryl Steinberg is not it. He, under his watch, Stephon Clark, Daryl Richards, Brandon Smith, Marshall Miles, Joseph Mann, how many people? And that's all that we know of, you know? Like, how long are we going to keep doing this?
Well, T, we wish you a speedy recovery for sure, and good luck in the surgery. T. Fansofa was hit by a tear gas canister and several rubber bullets on Saturday night in downtown Sacramento. Thank you for joining us today.
Can I say one more thing? Mm-hmm. I mean, I'm not using my real name because I fear police retaliation. And that night they came into the ER and to question me. And they weren't concerned for my safety at all.
I see. Well, thank you for telling us that bit of transparency.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Another person who was at the demonstration downtown but left prior to the violence and police crackdown that we just discussed is trans activist Ebony Ava Harper. We spoke with Ebony here on Cap Radio a year ago to talk to her about thoughts on Sac Pride. You may remember there was some controversy as to whether police officers should be welcome to march in the parade, given a long history of cracking down on the LGBTQ community, including decades of violence. And there were violent protests back then, too. You know, it was 51 years ago this month that the Stonewall riots took place, marking a major shift in the gay community. Ebony's back with us today to talk about the current state of affairs. Welcome, Ebony.
Hi, Randall. How are you?
It's good to see you again. I was filling in for Beth Ruyak the day that you were on Insight. I want to start with the demonstrations to bring justice for George Floyd. What are you seeing in terms of the LGBTQ community's support there?
I believe the person that you previously interviewed, who's a good friend of mine, they're queer. We're heavily, we're heavily involved in these protests because, as you know, Stonewall started with a riot, and that was because of the oppression in our community. And here we are 51 years later, and as Black and as API and as brown folks, we still meet the same oppressions. So it's very easy to see the intersections between, you know, Black cis oppressions and Black trans oppressions and brown and API oppressions. And so we're heavily integrated in what's going on right now.
Ebony, would you say that the Black community and the gay community have had a complicated history?
I would say very complicated. So our involvement in the social justice movement is complicated, but we're very intentional on saying any injustice, even if we don't agree with your politics or who you are, is wrong. And so it's more about injustice than if you agree with me or not. We'll handle that later. But right now, a Black man was killed by a police. It's not just one Black man. It's thousands. And from Emmett Till to Ahmaud Arbery to the trans person, Tony McDade, who was killed in Tallahassee, Florida. Iyanna Dior, who was beat last night by a group of men. There's a whole bunch of violence going on towards our Black community and specifically to our trans and queer community folks.
Ebony, I want to get to Pride in just a moment because we know that all events have been canceled in Sacramento because of the coronavirus pandemic. But sticking with the George Floyd demonstrations for now, we've seen some people approach police officers to ask them to take a knee. And we have these officers taking a knee alongside demonstrators. I know you have an opinion when it comes to this.
Randall, I think you know my politics. We talked last year. I kind of led the revolt at Pride last year. And, you know, sometimes these cops are taking a knee to reload their artillery. They have been known to take a knee and because they're reloading. And then they fire shots at the crowd, like they did with my friend. And I'm getting emotional because my friend who you just interviewed is so beautiful. And to see them with their half of their face fractured because they were feeding protesters. And that's who they are. They always come out to feed us at protests, from Stephon Clark to these current protests. In fact, every day they was cooking for us and everything. And so good people like that, who's not really causing anything, they're trying to support community, that pisses me off. And yes, these cops, they kneel, but they've been known to kneel and then go back to beating and shooting canisters because they're doing their job, and their job is to uphold the law, and the law oppresses the people at the bottom, which is overwhelmingly most of us, Randall, and it upholds the people at the top, which is the rich people.
Ebony, I'm sorry, I have to end it there, but Ebony Ava Harper, she's a trans activist here in Sacramento. Thank you so much for joining us today.
All right. Thank you, Randall. I appreciate it.
Mm-hmm. And we're back in just a moment. We will hear from a Sacramento-based jazz trio that shares their experience with systemic racism in the area. You're listening to Special Coverage here on CAP Radio. I'm Randall White. David McKissick fronts the Sacramento jazz band A Tribe Quartet, and last week contributed to Cap Radio's Tiny Desk Concert Roundup. This week, McKissick and fellow musicians Zarin Sims and Aaron Smith spoke to Cap Radio's Nick Bruner about their experiences with systemic racism and a song dedicated to the memory of Stephon Clark. They begin the discussion about Black Lives Matter protests in Sacramento. Here's David McKissick.
I'm comfortable admitting that I'm doing my best. I can't. My father's high risk. I'm high risk. I'm asthmatic. And my mother's a registered nurse, so she can't really get sick. I mean, at a cost to her job. So I've taken more of a social media kind of stance. I'm sharing every information that I do is credible. You know, I'm checking up on my friends. I'm actively trying to participate more and find more avenues to where I can be more useful. But I don't want to make myself a burden amongst people while having an asthma attack when somebody's throwing some gas or something. I tried last night to just get away and take a step back. I cannot. Like, I went to bed to the sounds of sirens and helicopters. Like, that was my lullaby last night. People are like, yeah, man, take a step back, take a break. But I can't step out of that. I'm in it 24/7. I should be able to be Black and not have to be worried. Zarin's actually been out on the lines himself.
Yeah, so I've been out here Saturday and then Sunday, Wednesday earlier this week, and I've been taking just a break from it just because out of respect for my family. And you probably hear like just how I'm finally getting my voice back. But yeah, just from being out there, it's just so many people are tired of this. And it's not even just Black people. It's people of all races that are out there like marching and trying to actually fight for something. You know, it's really saddening, you know, because we got to all come together for just this, you know. But at the same time, it's beautiful because you see that there's all these people that aren't just going to take it. There's all these people that are going to actually stand up for Black lives, you know. I think the only thing from out there is we need is just complete solidarity when we're out there, because there's a lot of kids out there. A lot of people out there that can get hurt. We don't want people to get hurt out here. They're trying to say that, you know, this rioting and looting is all just Black people just going crazy. No, like, there are definitely white infiltrators breaking things and running away. Like, I see firsthand, and it's just like, we can't have this. Yeah. And it's so crazy because white allies, like, you. I mean, I'm seeing these people literally jump in front of me, trying to stand in front of me, trying to protect me, knowing that I'm emotional and I'm angry and they might view me as hostile. So they're jumping in front of me and placing their bodies in front of me. And it's just like, this is what we got to do to live. It shouldn't have to be this way.
You know, people are definitely taking the step and doing what is right to help make a change.
Next, we hear from trumpeter Aaron Smith.
Something really interesting I've noticed over the last like few years, you know, while I do understand that, you know, Ahmaud's case, like having his video shown, it created awareness for his particular case, and it had those people who murdered him, they got arrested. And the same thing with George. But at the same time, there's a part of me that's, I'm almost disturbed by the fact that, you know, we have to watch these videos over and over and over, and these videos are shared over and over and over.
Four years.
It's just like, at a point, I see those thumbnails sometimes. I'm not going to lie. When I saw George Floyd's thumbnail for the first time, it literally made me sick to my stomach. I'm just sitting there going like, and people are just posting and sharing, and not really realizing that it's like, you know, at the end of the day, we're literally watching someone die on camera.
My entire life has been kind of filled with these kind of social biases / underhanded racism. Like, I did a gig with Tribe Quartet in Chico, and I was chatting it up with a bass player of the band that we were playing with. And he makes a remark, essentially, you know, because Zarin and I were talking and we have a little banter. And he goes, oh, he must be the hoodest of the four, implying that my drummer's hood, implying that I'm also some sort of hood or ghetto, my bass player's hood or ghetto, and that my guitar player's hood or ghetto. I was livid. So I had to leave the premises of the property, vent to my friends, vent to my musicians, my coworkers, because it was a lot. We went and played the show. It was a very passionate show. And then after the show, I made sure that I went and spoke with the man and let him know how I felt. I found out that just from talking to him, because immediately after the show, he was the first person to come out and be like, yeah, man, that was a great show. And I was like, you know, I go, yeah, man, like what you said to me earlier was kind of jacked up and out of pocket. And, you know, I went on to explain to him how I was offended and how he offended, you know, my musicians. And then, you know, from just talking to him, I can tell that he was trying to be relatable, but all Black people don't come from ghettos or our hood. I mean, that's just a fact. Like, we're just like everyone else. Like, I don't get why. But anyway, I digress. And, you know, he started crying because, you know, his view was rooted in ignorance. Like, I recognized that it was an ignorance. Like, and I had to take a step back because I was mad, but I had to really get my point across. He was genuinely sorry, and I feel for him. And, you know, I held no hard feelings, especially after I was able to voice how I felt. So when I see these protests, you know, I think it's, I'm sorry, I'm getting a little choked up. When I see these protests, though, I think it's a really good thing because it's speaking and working on these injustices.
Is it okay to transition into music for just a little bit?
Please.
All right.
Please.
Without getting too far away from everything we've been talking about today, I'd like to talk about Melancholy.
Okay. So Melancholy is a composition I wrote probably a month and a half after hearing about Stephon Clark's murder. That happened two blocks from where I live, so it's really literally and figuratively close to home. When I wrote Melancholy at the time, I didn't know it was going to be what it was. It was just me writing, putting together chords. But I felt that song accurately describes how I feel when I hear about these injustices and police brutality and stuff in my own community.
And that song, it's become like just a center point for me. Like, after like the protest, it was a really hard day, and I sat down and I played along to it, and I felt so free. Like, you feel it, like you feel the tension like rise. That's what we feel. That is Black rage. That is Black love. That is Black people. That's everything, quantified and focused.
What I also love about it is that we're Black musicians expressing ourselves through Black American music. Like, if you listen to the track, you'll identify, oh, there's some R&B elements, there's some hip-hop elements. And then when we get to the next section, where I feel that's when the rage is boiling over. Where we're at now is literally the B section to Melancholy to me. But yep. It's just everything is just so built up, and it's just trying to come out. I put this group together with the inspiration of like Kamasi Washington and the West Coast Get Down and the savviness of like Nicholas Payton. So like, I'm very blessed to have been born in this time, I will say, musically, because everything is so limitless.
And never before has everything been so accessible.
Right. I think the best person who has the best Spotify is my mom. Shout out to my mom, because she's been putting me in the gym since I was a baby, bro. I remember being 6, 7 years old listening to Gorillaz. You know what I'm saying? Like, and I was with the Gorillaz, and then right after the Ohio Players comes on. Like, what? And I think, you know, I think that's how, even in my compositions, that's why it's like, why would you put these two together? That's literally how I've been introduced to music.
Zarin Sims, Aaron Smith, David McKissick, thank you so much.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you, Nick. Thank you.
Nick Bruner there, Cap Radio's Modern Music Director, filing that piece. Read about David's favorite local entrance from this year's Tiny Desk Concert online at capradiomusic.org. And be on the lookout for A Tribe Quartet's debut album that's coming out soon. Tomorrow morning on Insight, Beth Ruyak will explore new recommendations from UC health experts about protests and COVID-19 risks. And I'm Randall White. We'll be back again tomorrow with discussions surrounding police violence that starts at 3:30.